The Lord be with you.
And with your
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding feast at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." But Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." But his mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. And Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them to the brim. And then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." They did so. And when the head waiter tasted the water which had become wine, without knowing from whence it had come, only the servers knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then when people have drunk freely, the inferior wine. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the first of his signs at Cana in Galilee. And so he revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord. Before I begin my homily, I want to mention that in the hall, after Mass, you want to go over and visit. There are 2 exhibitions going on over there. And by the way, the donuts are free. So you really want to go for that. It's a free donut. Anytime you get anything free from the church, take it. Because very, very rarely you get anything coming back. Anyway, John August Swanson is over there. Now, some of you will be familiar with John August Swanson, a remarkable fellow. I think he's a deeply, deeply spiritual man, and all his paintings and all his serigraphs are all expressions of his faith. And I've known him for a long time. I've talked with him over there, and he said, "Here's the one I have of the wedding feast of Cana." I said, "Fine, I'll show this to the people before we begin the homily, because that's today's gospel, as you know." The second exhibition over there is of equal interest, and it's a series of paintings, freehand paintings, by prisoners, those who are incarcerated. And it's put on by our restorative justice ministry in the Archdiocese, and Holy Family is part of that. I had one man over there ask me if I'd sign this card against the death penalty, and I said, "I'd be happy to. I'm soundly against the death penalty." He was on death row himself, this man who asked me. And they found DNA that found out he was the wrong person before he was executed. So, wow, okay. Where do I sign? Okay, I signed. Let me talk a little bit about this gospel. Now, keep in mind the exhibition we have of the Cana of Galilee and of the prisoners, because that somehow is bound into our reflection on the wedding feast at Cana. Now, Cana in Galilee, many of you have been there. Any pilgrims, any serious pilgrims to the Holy Land, do visit Cana. It's about 70 miles north of Jerusalem in the area of Galilee. Population, about 20,000, a little smaller than South Pasadena. A significant Christian population there. It's largely Muslim, but there is a very significant Christian presence there. And there's a parish church there dedicated to the miracle at Cana that we speak about in today's gospel. There's a wedding feast there, the gospel tells us. And in the time of Jesus, the wedding went on for 7 days. So there's lots of drinking going on in the 7 days, as you can imagine. And we'll see what that means in the teaching of the gospel reading. when Jesus speaks, he's invited to the wedding. Clearly, his mother has an interest. She has some stake in the wedding because she's the one who presumes to come to him to say they're short of wine, which means somehow she might have been related to somebody in the wedding or something. But she's clearly a fairly assertive lady because she comes and says, hey, they're short of wine. But he could have said, well, let's have a beer, but he didn't. He said, okay, they're short of wine. We have a crisis here. And he says, my hour has not yet come. But interestingly, he addresses her as woman. He said, woman, what is your concern means to me? And now that sounds a pejorative reference in today's culture and in our language. But in the time of Jesus, that was not pejorative. That was a very respectful way of addressing his mother. In the Gospel of John, this text is from John. In the Gospel of John, John never mentions Mary. He doesn't ever call the mother of Jesus Mary. There are two references here. One is to woman. He calls her woman. Why does this concern me? If you look out in chapter 19, you'll remember this. When Jesus is dying on the cross, and he sees his mother at the foot of the cross, and the beloved disciple, he says, woman, behold your son. The two references to woman in the Gospel of John. Now, some years ago, in one of the pilgrimages, many pilgrimages we did over there, I got to the church in Cana of Galilee, and we always have a wedding feast. I always have a wedding feast with the pilgrims, which means I buy a cake, and I have flowers for the brides, and I have them renew their wedding vows at Cana. One year, by the way, Gabe Gutierrez, who's a parishioner here, his wife was very, very sick, and she couldn't go, so he got on his cell phone in Cana with the pilgrims, and he talked with her from Cana, and they renewed their vows long distance. It was kind of touching. She died shortly after that. Gale. So we have the wedding feast, and then we go to a vendor, and he loves to give you wine because he'll get you into his shop, and then everybody buys the stuff in his shop. The Cana wine is cheap and it's not very good, but it's free, so he give you the free wine. So that's the way we have our wedding feast. One year, and by the way, I have the couples renew their vows, and then one or two couples give a testimony about their journey of marriage. Well, one year, some years ago, we got there 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the church was closed. There's a little courtyard in front of the church, which is enclosed, and we decided we'd do our ceremony outside the closed doors of the church, the renewal of vows. And we decided that, I guess I decided, that we dedicate this to all couples married outside the church. But they got to the church and the doors were closed for whatever reason. So we dedicated this prayer and this renewal of vows to all the couples who didn't have access to the church for their marriage. And I'll tell you, most of the folks there had somebody in their lives who was married outside the church. Good marriages, holy marriages, but not in the church. Now, I remember when I came here 31 years ago, there was a marvelous family in our parish, 10 children. Most of them were adults, 3 or 4 were teenagers. And they were just decent, lovely, good people and very attached to Holy Family. They moved away shortly after, relocated. But this man, I remember saying to me, no divorce in my family. He was very proud of that. He said, absolutely, we would never have a divorce in my family. I said, okay, you haven't joined humanity yet. Would we join humanity that day when we had the renewal of vows and our prayer for all those outside the church? Which prompted me to reflect, speaking of marriage is parenthetic, but it's important to our homily, and that is how people get married in the church or out of the church. In 1563, the last document of the Council of Trent, a document called Temesti, it's remarkable that we even know the date. It was November 11th. And this document, among other things, especially dealt with marriage and all the things that were necessary for a sacramental marriage for Catholics. Before the Council of Trent, it was all over the place. There were various liturgies, various ways of doing it. It was very diverse and very confusing. And the council put it together. And they created this Temesti document. And thereafter, they spawned a very significant body of regulations and laws dealing with who qualifies and who doesn't qualify and all that. We're left with that today. It is updated a few times since the Council of Trent, but essentially the substance comes from the corpus of that document. Now, in the Synod, recently, in the recent past in Rome, Pope Francis wanted to discuss the notion of marriage and access to the Eucharist for people in second marriages, which means it's a discussion point now. By the way, the same family that said we have no marriage divorce in our family found fierce objections to girls serving Mass. We didn't have any girls serving Mass. We began to do that here. Now how we have changed. And how we have changed in the marriage issue also. Now the Synod began to discuss how to give access to the Eucharist for people in second marriages or married out of the Church. Which prompts us to wonder how this gospel speaks to that issue. And by the way, in the present age, we're now dealing with same-sex marriage. Now, very controversial issue. But we have couples that belong to Holy Family here who are same-sex married couples. Now, is there a place in our hearts for them or isn't there? Don't answer until we look at what the gospel says to us today. Is there a place in the community where they can find a spiritual home? Well, let's see what the gospel says about that. This gospel deals with Jesus coming to the wedding feast of Cana, and they run out of wine. In the Gospel of John, it's not ever referred to as a miracle. There are no miracles in John's Gospel. There are signs. He says it's the first of the signs that Jesus performs in Cana of Galilee. There are seven signs. Now, we have these six stone water jars, probably 120, 130, 150 gallons of wine. It's a lot of wine, even for 7 days. Now, we're not meant to take this literally. It's a sign. And the sign is, it's meant to sign the abundance of God's love. The lavish quality of the way God loves. So that somehow we get a grasp of the revelation of God's infinite love in Jesus Christ. That the miracle is so incredibly lavish. It's meant to represent the incredible embrace of God's infinite love. That's the sign. Don't cling to the sign, the number of gallons. See what it means. And it means God's love is lavish, infinite, all embraces. Read through the signs and you'll find this repeated over and over again. In chapter 4, the second sign, it's a Roman centurion, not a Jew, part of the occupying force, and his son is ill, and Jesus heals his son. In chapter 5, you have this paralytic. There's nothing that he qualifies or he merits anything. Jesus heals him. And then he calms the waters, and he feeds the multitude. When he feeds the multitude, there must have been sinners and crazy people and nutcases, everything, 5,000 of them. They are gathered, every kind of bread. He feeds everybody. He doesn't discriminate here. And chapter 9, you have the blind man. He doesn't qualify, he doesn't merit. He gives him sight. And then finally, in chapter 11, you have the last sign. He raises Lazarus from the dead. Gives Lazarus life. Lazarus was dead. He was more than dead. He was very dead. He was dead for 4 days. So he brings him back to life. He gives him life so that he understands life comes from God's love. What does all this mean to us? It means that somehow we have experienced
God's infinite love in our own lives. You'll never know that until you hit darkness. You will never know that until you get discouraged, until the world kind of collapses around you. And when that happens, you won't stand in judgment on anyone anymore. You'll be grateful because somebody touched you with love, and somebody lifted up your spirit, and somebody gave you a second chance, and somebody said, don't be so hard on people, because God wasn't hard on you. God blessed you with forgiveness. God blessed you. So whenever you come to judgment, remember your darkness. And remember how God's infinite love blessed you and encouraged you and lifted you up, gave you hope, so that you too would lift up other people's spirits and give them hope. That's the teaching. It's a teaching about the lavish love of God. So keep that in mind here. There's a new book that just came out this week. Our bookstore diligently passed it on to me right away, so I read it. It's a book called The Name of God is Mercy by Pope Francis. It's a good read. It's very easy to read. It's not a long book. Pope Francis speaks in language that I understand. He speaks to me in my life. Simple language, not sophisticated, not complicated. He just talks about the infinite love of God. The name of God is mercy. So rejoice. The gospel calls us to rejoice. Be grateful because God has blessed us. God understands us. God includes us. And so we experience the inclusive love of God. This is to be passed on to others, that somehow the manner in which we witness Jesus Christ is the manner in which we witness God's infinite and inclusive love. Amen.